It's Tuesday, 17th of November. It's time to get your grin on with the Grincast, here to discuss the world of gaming from the past week. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me are Rhodes.
Hello.
Dominoid.
Hello.
Nikki.
Hello.
And Winx.
Hello.
Welcome, one and all, to this podcast, the final one before the PlayStation 5 comes out in this country, because it's out in most of the world already.
Don't do that, like that, Ace. Come on.
For games that everyone's been playing this week, I think we'll go in reverse order so Rhodes can be ready this time. Winx, take us away.
I've been replaying Rocket League again with like multiple different people. It's been interesting. Like, I've actually gone into not having private matches, but I've actually gone into the ranked matches for the first time in years, and it's daunting. Everyone's flying and doing Matrix stuff, and I'm just there, just about carrying the team, just about. But it's been fun trying to relearn the game again, and just with different people, different skills, really interesting, and yeah, getting back into it.
Okay, Nikki, what about you?
Hello. Well, it's the usual affair of wearing. No, playing. I may as well be wearing a Zero Lane and Genshin Impact at this point. Like, my phone is surgically attached to me. Continuing with my usual gacha business of just being an absolute, not a whale, but I'm min-maxing. I've got plans. I've got spreadsheets. You know, we're getting there slowly. Less said about those, the better, because I talk about them every week. Two games I've mainly been playing for the past week, actually. Destiny 2 Beyond Light. Dropped last week. The season actually kicked off today at the time of recording, so I'll probably jump into that after this podcast and see what all that lovely content is. I'm going to do a review for the site, so look forward to that. Spoilers is good. It's more Destiny, so it's good. The fact that some content was removed is definitely a sore spot. We've spoken about it a little bit before. I like the way that they have removed it, like, in terms of lore. It's quite interesting, but yeah, you know, there is a bunch of content that's gone. Haven't really felt the impact yet, though, because I've been obviously going through the campaign for Beyond Light, and the new seasonal content, I'm sure, will keep me busy as well. But we'll see how maybe in like a week or two it goes. Interestingly, though, they kept the PvP maps from the planets that left. I don't know if that's just they just forgot and they're going to remove them, or if they're staying. But it's really weird going into PvP and suddenly being on a planet that technically doesn't exist anymore.
Some might say they've been ignoring PvP for a while.
Which is stupid, because that's basically how they've been balancing the entire game. PvE has been balanced by the PvP players. It's mad. But very quickly, one thing I do want to say about Beyond Light, Titan for Life. The campaign, I'll go more into my review. The new subclass, they give it to you as like a little, they sort of drip feed it to you, and you only get to use it during like boss encounters, which is fine, but you're only really going to use it to nuke the boss, you know, literally just destroy them in that last moment and just throw ice at them or stasis. But once you actually finish the campaign and you actually get it and you can use it any way you want, I've decided that this is my new favorite subclass for one reason. And that is, playing as Titan, you can make a barricade. You can like spawn a wall in front of you, and it's great. It stops bullets, but enemies can walk through it, and it's always bugged me. For 4 years, it's bugged me. Now I can throw a grenade on the floor and summon a giant column of like wall of ice that freezes enemies, damages them when it explodes, and they can't go through it. And if they shoot it and it explodes, it hurts them. I now have actual area of denial abilities. I can actually like make a proper wall. I can control the battlefield, and it feels so good to actually be able to make a hard point of cover and dramatically change the flow of a combat encounter. So good job, Bungie. It's really fucking cool. In complete contrast, I've also been playing Days Gone, and I wanted to talk about this one very quickly because I did a mission over my lunch break, and I could not stop laughing. I'm like halfway through the game. I thought I was about to end it because there was a big climactic kind of moment. I took down a boss, turns out after checking a walkthrough, there's like another whole half of a game to go. So, dear Lord, it'll be taking me another week or two. But this the thing I want to talk about is this fantastic moment in the boss encounter. No spoilers. But I killed the boss. I won. I'm feeling really good for myself. Their body hits the floor. And just before the cutscene, all I see come out of their body is 50 XP. And I just could not stop laughing throughout the entire cutscene. I have no idea what happened for story reasons, because the thought that this boss, who they've been hyping up for hours, was worth the same amount as XP as a standard zombie was the most hilarious thing to me. And kind of just really reinforces that game. But no, really, really good game. I genuinely, if you slept on Days Gone, I know there's the whole new generation now and stuff, but like if you ever see it cheap, do pick it up. Do give it a go. I know Rhodes probably hates me right now for saying that, but it's got some interesting things, and I think especially if you get it cheap, you'll find some fun with it. I'm really, really enjoying it.
I believe it's in the PlayStation Plus collection, isn't it? So,
oh, even better,
next gen, then they can pick it up free.
Obviously, if you had the collection. And it did get a patch to run better on PS5 as well, which oddly made the PS4 version run a little bit better too. So, nice. But that's me.
Okay, Dominoid, what about you?
So I've been playing a bit more of Animal Rescuer. That's quite nice. It's got cute animals in it. For more information, keep an eye out for my preview, which should be up soon. I have started trying to get around to some of the games that came out earlier in 2020 that I missed as well. So I have played a few random games that have been well received or particularly poorly received on the site in 2020, mainly so I've got something to talk about when the Game of the Year podcast comes up. But the one I've really been focusing on is Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, which is an amazingly good game, but ridiculously frustratingly difficult. Like, more so than previous Crash Bandicoots, I think. Like, it's a brilliant game, but it's I don't want to say it's the Dark Souls of platforming, but it probably
wouldn't that
is.
Go to Cuphead, do you think? Do you think Cuphead's worse than or harder than Crash 4?
I think Cuphead is harder, but I'm not sure I'd count Cuphead as a platformer as such. It's more of a boss rush game than a platformer as such. But yeah, I suppose you can say that. But if we call Cuphead a platformer, then we'd also have to call Contra a platformer, and that's the same level of hard. But either way, Crash is awesome. Other than that, most of my time has been taken up by playing Bugsnax. I picked it up on launch day on the Epic Store. It didn't come out until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which is really annoying because I got up a couple of hours before work thinking, oh, I can get started on it before work. Nope. Didn't come out till 2 in the afternoon. Finished work, played it. My partner went to bed about 10 o'clock. And I said, oh, that's all right, I'll just catch a few more Bugsnax. I'll be up in a bit. Come midnight, I got a text message saying, are you coming to bed or not? It's just, it's so cute. It's like one of the, not only is it one of the cutest games that I've played in a long time, it's also got like a real heart to it. The story just covers loads of really nice little sort of human condition things. It's got really good LGBT representation. There's two sets of main characters who are same-sex couples. There's a non-binary person in the cast, and it's all just sort of incidental. Yeah. It's not sort of shoehorned in and made really obvious because that's their only thing. It's just they happen to exist. And I really like that. I just like seeing that in games. It's representation, but not sort of for the sake of making them look good, if that makes sense.
Our review was on the site. It's very positive too.
It's a great game. Absolutely great game. I love it. If you're on the fence, get it. It's just it's just so good.
Okay, Rhodes, yourself?
Well, I've played a bit of Destiny 2. The new update was out. I saw all the hype in the old Game Grin podcast Discord, so I thought I'd download it. Can't really say I've got on with it all that much, because every time I boot it up, I disconnect. So I've probably played about an hour of it, really, because I get about 5 minutes in, and then it just kicks me out, and I'm like, can't be arsed with this. Online games and all that.
So you're very well practiced with the loading screen, then?
Yeah, I love the loading screen. Great theme. Absolutely fantastic theme. I love the design of the little ship that you have. Couldn't really tell you anything about Destiny 2 other than that.
it doesn't even have tips on the loading screen, does it?
It's not even any lore. I can't even read anything. I don't learn anything about Destiny while I'm there. I just get to hear the lovely music.
It's got a nice little spinny icon in the bottom right, though. Very satisfying.
But mine doesn't spin. but yeah, I do like Destiny. I did enjoy Destiny 2 when it first came out, so I will probably go back to it, but I think it just needs to settle down for like the bigger rush of players. Obviously caused a bit of issues there, so I'll just give it a couple of weeks, and then once it settles down, I'll probably go back to it. I'm playing God of War, the new one that's 2 years old, so not really new anymore. I beat it before, but I was playing through it with my partner. Yeah, God of War, it's good. Love the axe. Feels good. Great story. Probably one of my favourite games of the PS4 generation. Not really much more else I could say about it. Definitely would recommend to anyone who's not tried it. And Football Manager 2021, the new Football Manager. Same spreadsheet, different year. Already got Forest in the Premier League. Already in the European Cup. I have a lot of time on my hands. Please don't judge me, all of my colleagues, and everyone who listens.
I have a genuine question about Football Manager.
Go on.
What is, like, I'm going to sound like an idiot, what is the end goal? Like, what are you trying to do?
Well, I guess it depends on a person-by-person basis, I suppose. Your end goal could just be, I want to win the European Cup, in which case you play as, like, Manchester United or something and just succeed as quickly as you can. I personally just like playing as Forest because we're shit in real life, and I like the fact that I can make them look somewhat good in a video game and be like, look, it's not FIFA, so technically I'm a genius.
It's like Crusader Kings or Civilization or The Sims, that there is no end goal. It's just play because it's a game that does what you want it to do.
Yeah, you play for success, and depending on what your team is, what your expected success and the longevity of your goals will obviously be different. Obviously, everyone goes about it differently. You might be a team that only buys young players and develops in the future. You might just want to spend loads of money and splash out like a big team does. There's a lot of variance to it. You know, there's a hell of a lot of detail that goes into it. Like the level of data is unbelievable. Like if you're a data nerd, even if you don't like football, you'll probably be like, oh, this is nice. Yeah, it's good. It's well made. It's very consistent. I think that's what I like about it.
I can definitely relate to the whole goal of getting your team to look good, because I'm a Brighton fan, so I normally tend to do the same thing to try and get success for us. And over the years, that's been of varying difficulty levels.
For the non-football listeners out there, I just want to point out that Brighton are slightly better than Forest, and I hate that a lot. But other than Football Manager, the last game on my list, the gem of my week, is Wheel of Fortune.
What?
So I've been playing Wheel of Fortune. So me and my girlfriend, when we're both off work, we tend to play like strange games. So like we really enjoy the Trivial Pursuit game on the PS4. But we played it so much now that like the questions have come up and we just know the answers because we played it that much that there's no new questions for it anymore. So it was going through the PSN store, see if there's anything else that was kind of cool or stood out. And there was Wheel of Fortune on sale. And I was like, well, it looks like we're playing Wheel of Fortune. As it turns out, I'm not very good at Wheel of Fortune. But my girlfriend is incredibly good at Wheel of Fortune.
I was really hoping that it was going to be like the Tiger handheld of Wheel of Fortune from the 90s.
Not quite. Maybe I'll go for that next week so I can discuss that one then. But on this particular edition of Wheel of Fortune, one of the questions, obviously, each round of Wheel of Fortune, it's a game where you have to guess what the word is or words And the subject was people. Or I think it was famous people from history, I think the subject was. And the letters on the screen. I was going first and the letters on the screen. Perfectly lined up with Genghis Khan. And I was certain I was right because it lined up perfectly. And I've never been so devastated to hear a buzz and say it was wrong at any point in my life as I was at that moment. I was like, I'm not as smart as I thought I was. And then when my girlfriend got it right, I was just, that was it, controlled was out the window. So
what was the answer then?
I can't remember. I blanked it out. I don't accept defeat well.
So next, your next purchase is probably going to be Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which came out recently on Switch, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC.
Don't forget the recent release of Fort Boyard as well.
I did see Fort Boyard. That was on the list of ones I might have gone for. It was between that Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy.
I'd go for Jeopardy just so that you can sing I'm a Little Teapot along to the theme music.
Want to be a teapot.
It's better not to ask. Right, myself, I played the usual Simpsons Tapped Out, a bit of Noita, did some Dauntless, Star Trek Online. A bit more Watch Dogs 2, making steady progress in that. But new games I've been playing, Streets of Rage 4. I played the first couple of areas and decided, that's enough. And uninstalled it. It's not a bad game. It's just it gets kind of boring for me. Side-scrolling beat 'em ups, they're all kind of samey to me. So, I played enough. I've experienced that game. It's a pretty good game. It looks good. Soundtrack's really good. But yeah, not my cup of tea. Loaded up the new Assassin's Creed game has come out, so of course I went back to Assassin's Creed 2 and played that in the Ezio collection. The most recent bit I've gotten to is Monte Gennaro. You go there and meet Ezio's uncle. It's a me, Mario. Literally what he says. And that's where I am in that game. I'm enjoying for those of you who don't know, I played the first game, loved it, played the second game and really enjoyed it up until they said, oh, that memory's locked. Maybe you should come back later and go and see if you can access that memory. And that memory was locked behind paid DLC. And if you interrupt my full AAA title to say, hey, go buy the DLC, I don't like that. So that's the last I played of the Assassin's Creed games.
I can relate to that. Like, do you remember once there was a time you could just buy a game and you owned the game?
You licensed the game on the disc or floppy disks that you purchased it on.
I'm 10 years old.
So. But yes, as I say, I haven't played any Assassin's Creed game since 2, so I figured I'd resume 2, but this time on the Ezio collection, which has much nicer graphics, but the same awful ledge finding AI or whatever. Because you jump off of a ledge and, oh, you meant to jump off at this angle. No, I didn't, and now I'm dead. Great.
To be fair, I keep having that problem in Days Gone, which is hilarious. It's like, oh, I'll just spin the camera around to see what that zombie behind me is doing. And I've just ran off the ledge. Okay.
Well, speaking of zombies, that takes us into the news. Capcom has been hacked with ransomware. Capcom, of course, the best known for Resident Evil, Street Fighter, and Devil May, whatever it's called. They confirmed that their servers were hit by a ransomware attack on the 2nd of November. For those of you who don't know, ransomware is a virus that scrambles your files and locks them behind a password and gives you information of who you should pay and how much to get the password to unscramble your files. It seems that they chose to not pay, given the fact they're talking about the hack and the group Ragnar Locker posted on their Darknet webpage that Capcom didn't make a right decision and save data from leakage. So apparently Capcom has now lost this user data because it seems they didn't have it backed up on another system, or perhaps this ransomware scrambled the backup as well. Unlikely.
This is where we learn the importance of backing up in a secure location.
Yes, and not in a unencrypted notepad. it's affected customer data for Japanese and American. The Japanese and American Capcom store and customer support. They haven't said how many people are affected. They know of only a handful who are staff or ex-staff members. But yeah, if you've ever given your data to Capcom, mind out.
Has anyone ever given their data to Capcom, though?
I don't know the last time I played a new Capcom game.
I did have a look on here to see like what the supported games are, and basically it's just save data for the Resident Evil games, or online play for the six people who played Umbrella Corps.
Oh no, I think I was one of those people who played Umbrella Corps.
Oh dear. This is a due punishment, I feel.
Hey, no, come on, right.
Playing
right.
Umbrella Corps was the punishment for playing Umbrella Corps.
Legitimately, Umbrella Corps had good, like, kind of like Metal Gear Survive, in that, like, it was one of those games where you played it and it was like, oh shit, there's actually some good ideas here.
Apparently none of the information at risk contained credit card information, because Capcom does not keep that information. It's all handled by third party service providers. So at least your bank details are safe, but your names, addresses, phone numbers, etc.
Or just that little thing, that little detail.
Yeah, this is why I know PayPal aren't exactly the best of companies, but this is why sometimes if you're buying something and maybe you're not too sure about the security, it's good to use PayPal, because they handle all of that, so you just have to worry about them getting hacked.
Well, maybe like these big companies shouldn't really have to have all this data on us, like our addresses and stuff. I think that's a bit too much.
No, you're far-fetched with your ideas. I think you need to calm down.
But how will I know where to launch that tactical nuke when I find out that you've been pirating that one game that was released 20 years ago, and we could, and you won't pay us the millions of dollars that we demand?
We're preventing piracy by having all your details, and if our privacy gets contaminated, gets hacked, then oops, I guess shouldn't have given us your details. I guess.
I mean, to be fair though, does anybody give their actual address for something where the address doesn't really matter?
Can't remember the last time I gave my address to something that wasn't getting something delivered, to be honest.
Yeah, if I get asked for an address and there isn't some actual reason for them needing my address, like a physical product, I'll normally just put in the address for 10 Downing Street. Does nobody else do that? That'd just be...
No, it's not like our real addresses.
If there's no verification of email on a form and I don't really want to give my email address, then I'll usually put news@10.com.
I'm just imagining.
No idea how many databases that's in now.
All the junk mail they've got on like Downing Street floor now because of people putting the wrong fucking address down.
Oh yeah, they must have.
Who is this dominoid fellow?
Actually, thinking about it, does Downing Street have a letterbox? I don't think it does.
I think it does, but I don't think the postman can actually access it.
I'd assume all of their mail must go through like some kind of central office somewhere and then get delivered by hand by a police officer. So I doubt the junk mail ever actually makes it to 10 Downing Street. Just reject the call.
except for that one pizza flyer that manages to slip right in.
Dominoid's pizzas.
It's like one of those little post boxes on the gate to Downing Street. It's almost like, oh, Chinese in there. There you go.
Well, from one company you don't want to give your information to another one, because Genshin Impact, which recently had its 1.1 release update, it's turned out that the private data for some users mainly personal phone numbers linked to Genshin accounts. You could see those right on the website. All you had to do was type in, I've lost my account, forgotten password, lost my account. And then it would, you could access anyone's phone number if you knew their email address.
This is a perfect time for that meme that's been going around of Critical, where it goes, woo, and then just disappears. That's everyone quickly running off to remove the details.
I still haven't gotten around to downloading the Genshin mobile version of that game, so I'm completely unaffected.
Yeah, I don't think I even actually... I play on my phone and desktop. Two desktops. Oh, God, it's on all the machines. And I don't think I've actually put my phone number, but I'll double check. Interestingly, though, just on this as well, although they haven't said anything about payment information, if you have used your payment information, it may be worth double checking, just to be extra safe, because interestingly, you can only use you can't use PayPal on any version. You have to use your credit cards or debit cards unless you're on mobile, because then you can pay via Google Play, which lets you use PayPal.
It's probably to do with PayPal and China. I'm not sure they get along.
I am not sponsored by PayPal, by the way.
Or Genshin Impact.
But if you
wish I was sponsored by Genshin Impact.
If you want to use PayPal, go to paypal.com/gamegrid. No.
And give us money. Yeah, there's not really much to add to this one. It's just a case of like, well, this is just what Dominoid was saying earlier. So like, maybe companies should, you know, actually do proper security systems and stuff. But if you play Genshin, especially on mobile, maybe double check, you know, see if the information is visible, and see if you get that shit turned off. Hopefully they've addressed it. I would hope they would have already.
Yes, it has been quietly patched. They haven't said anything about it, but you can no longer find someone's entire phone number.
I know companies are pretty incompetent when it comes to user data, but this week especially has been pretty poor with Capcom and now Genshin Impact. It's like one's been hacked, one's leaked. There has to be some kind of... all they can say is that they're sorry. And it's like, how many times do like companies have to be sorry for them to actually, not have to be so greedy and needing all that data from us, which will, you know, never happen. They'll always...
To be fair, though, there isn't a huge amount of data for most of them. Like with Genshin, it seems to be just like a phone number. I sort of don't see the need to have it in there. I feel like with Genshin, a lot of it was to try and get sort of spam email, spam phone, spam text messages and stuff like that. But I kind of remember seeing one that did seem a bit weird. Is, have you noticed that it asks you in your profile, I think, when you first set it up, for the day and month of your birthday. And then at a point later in the game, it asks for your year of birth. So it asks for your date of birth, but in little sections, just, you know, so that you sort of feel like, oh, it's okay, I can trust them with my date of birth. I lied in both. But that's a little bit worrying. The Capcom one is probably a bit less worrying than Genshin, because they seem to be collecting a bit more for like advertising profiling.
Little do we all know that Genshin Impact as an anagram is just terms and conditions apply. You gotta sign your name underneath.
I think the thing is that sort of your personal information essentially for games like that and for services like that is generally going to be the payment. If you're getting something for free, then you are the product.
Mm.
And you've kind of got to determine that, do I want to give that information and get a thing for free? Or do I want to not get that information and just find something else that gives me a similar experience but doesn't require so much information but might cost something?
Or you can buy the product and then also be the product at the same time, which is a lot of these companies like Bethesda, the Bethesda Net, and anything that you have to require, that requires you to sign up anyway.
Yeah, but with most of them, though, it is just an email address and a password. And maybe tell them what your name is. So it's not quite so bad. It's when they start asking for actual personal information like birth dates and stuff like that, that it makes me a bit more worried. I'm not so worried if Battle.net gets hacked, then somebody knows what my email address is. Well, enough spammers already know my email address that there's not much protection in it anyway.
Mind you, just thinking about it, if you really wanted to have some fun, fun is a choice word. Hack the support chat history logs for MMOs, because most of them require you for most things to include some form of photo ID. Want people's passports? No problem. Just go after Battle.net support chat logs.
Okay, before you give too many hacking tips, let's talk about a hacking game. Cyberpunk 2077. Someone's taken a picture of the PlayStation 4 box. A part of the front and the entire of the back, and it's the main thing people are taking away from it is it's coming out on two Blu-rays and will take up over 70 gigabytes on your PlayStation 4.
Color me surprised. JPEG.
It's to be expected.
Yeah, did you know? Yeah. I mean, we know it's going to be ridiculously huge.
That's two discs out there as well.
That 70 gigabytes is going to be the 720 version. If you've got the PlayStation Pro, then that's going to be a lot bigger.
Do you know what? I'm really looking forward to getting my new game home, unwrapping the plastic, putting it in my PlayStation 4, and then fucking off for 3 hours while it installs.
Legitimately, when Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, I'm so glad that I checked Twitter in the morning, because a member of press was like screaming about how like, please like, just install it as soon as you get it, because it's a massive install. It took like the whole afternoon of just disc one to install the 7 Remake, so then I could put disc two in to then install the day one patch.
I remember having exactly that, and it was sort of one of those things where I'd put aside like 3 hours in the morning to play it before doing something in the afternoon, and that turned into playing it for about 25 minutes because the rest of the time was taken up by installing it.
This is why I like the Xbox. It installs from your disc and starts downloading any updates that it needs at the same time.
And it took us a whole other generation of consoles until we could do that.
No, the new Xbox does that immediately.
Xbox One S used to do that.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'll be slightly less judgmental.
I don't know whether the PlayStation 5 does, but you clearly know that the PlayStation 4 didn't.
No. No, it didn't. I don't really understand. Like, I've seen some people get proper kind of kicking off about it, and it's like, well, if you want it to be on one disc, then you're not going to have as much game. So it's kind of a no problem.
You will have as much game, it just won't have as many customization options.
Although I can't remember which one of us it was that joked earlier that the one of the discs will be delayed.
The install disc.
The day one patch will come out 2 days later.
It's not been delayed yet.
Oh, don't! There's still a lot of time for it to be delayed. Like, wasn't it closer to release when it was last?
It was 23 days
before it came out when it was delayed last time, and it is now 23 days.
Squeaky bum time, this is, I believe, is what they call it.
I'm sorry, what?
don't worry about it. It's a saying in a sport. It's fun.
I'm scared.
It's fine. Dominoid can vouch. It's fine.
Dominoid is oddly silent.
A sport. How ominous.
So about those segues, Ace.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a segue. I don't have a segue. Assassin's Creed Valhalla and Watch Dogs Legion have both recently come out. And saves haven't been working, meaning that, on consoles at least, meaning that players have lost entire days worth of progress. And that's actually affected my wife for 3 days. Today she was very happy because a mission she completed 3 days ago, she completed again and got the achievement, which means, hey, it must be working now. But we don't know for sure, of course. From what I was reading the other day, it appears to have been affecting players on all console versions of the game. And it only seemed to affect you if you lost your connection to Ubisoft, which was not down to you, it was down to them. It just, at random, it's a cannot connect to Ubisoft servers when you paused the game. And if that happened, then you could not exit the game. You had to force it closed, restart the console or something. And then when you loaded the game back up, it's like as if you hadn't played it at all.
It's a shame. Well
done, Ubisoft.
It's such a shame that you've gotten to the point now. It's like we always have like a different problem per console, but this kind of generation is kind of combinated in a single player game having to be connected online always for piracy reasons. I'm just kind of, when is that going to end? Because it's getting a bit ridiculous now.
It's not going to end. I can tell you that right now. As the internet becomes more and more accessible and more reliable, it will become more and more ingrained in video games.
Oh, sure. Like, especially with cloud gaming, you can't not be offline. You can't be offline on a cloud, like cloud streaming a game. But if you just own the game and you want to play a single player experience, that like it shouldn't have to be checked every 2 seconds, like we're being babied.
Yeah. The thing is, as well, I get it with stuff like Steam and like the PlayStation Store. If you buy digitally, I do get it, because if you're buying off the store, you need to be connected to show that you're logged in. It is your account. Yada yada yada. I do get it. It's when you buy a disc and you put the disc in, and then your console's like, "Hey, you're not connected to the internet right now." And you're like, "But I bought this. Like, I've got a physical version. I've got I'm a big cricket fan. I've got this cricket game that." The servers go down all the time. No one plays it multiplayer. Like, there's no multiplayer game like aspect to this game at all. But you boot it up to play it, and it's like the server's down, you can't play. I'm like, but why? Why does this matter to me? why is your servers going down stopping me from playing a game that I paid for?
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's gone to the point where like it would be like in the future when the server is down and you just want to play it offline, will you be able to?
No. That's why many people have started up their own peer-to-peer servers. Evolve, in fact, fairly recently, our editor-in-chief explained how Evolve, even though you can no longer buy it on Steam, if you already owned it, you can play it because you can set up peer-to-peer servers.
This is sort of a big issue moving forward for sort of things like preservation. But there's going to be games that aren't going to be lost. And yeah, some of them are going to be like Umbrella Corps and it doesn't matter. But some of them are going to be games that actually would be good to preserve as a piece of history. And that's just sort of, that's not going to be happening anymore because of the fact that there's all these online-only systems. And a lot of them will take that down and will patch it out before... you know, before they pull a game servers. But there have been quite a few notable and quite high-profile examples of times when that hasn't happened, and the game just becomes complete junk. And if you've paid 50 quid for a physical copy of it, you're going to get really annoyed that that's the case.
With this affecting Ubisoft, I thought it was especially funny because the first Watch Dogs game, when that came out, PC players couldn't play it because it was corrupting when they tried to start it, or the Uplay servers were down, so they couldn't start it. Or I just thought, two sequels later, Ubisoft servers are still causing issues.
I think the real hero of this story is Ace's wife, who, from everything I've read on your Twitter and heard on this podcast, has had nothing but bad experiences with the Watch Dogs Legion, and yet is somehow grinding through to the end of this fucking game. I've got nothing but respect for her, mate. That's all I can say.
It is a good point. She's determined to play the games.
She's almost like fighting the game to beat it.
But that's kind of... I feel like you probably shouldn't have to do that. Unless that's like a whole meta game thing, that you have to be some kind of master hacker to play this game about hacking. The only feasible way to play it is to find some kind of no CD crack.
Exactly. It's a feature. It's a feature of the game.
Well, something that is not a feature is that Xbox Series X and S are, they're running out of stock and most likely won't get any, enough to supply demand until April 2021. Which is, it's not very soon, is it?
Well, is it? I think it is a feature. Obviously, no one could have predicted the pandemic, but I think people are like learning from, especially like Nintendo is a key example of reducing the supply so that the demand is higher, just so they can get more press, more coverage on it.
Super Mario 3D All-Stars, cough.
Oh, for sure. But yeah, I think it is like part and parcel, the pandemic, and just keeping, not obviously not producing enough consoles, but...
The thing is, reducing the supply isn't going to in itself increase demand. It may potentially get you some column inches if you can say this product sold out. But as a business model, it doesn't really help. Like with Nintendo, it's a little bit different because they've sort of mastered the art of releasing sort of little things that scalpers will buy up, and then announcing that there's going to be more stock of it later on once the scalpers have bought it. So all the actual fans still end up getting to buy it. Because they did that with the NES Mini and the SNES Mini. But I don't see that working for something like a big console launch, because what's the next product that they put up? Because the idea is that this sold out stories then drive purchases from scalpers for the next thing that they release, and there isn't necessarily an impending next thing that Microsoft can bump the demand for.
Well, I would argue that especially with what Xbox is doing, they're slowly trickling out pre-orders. I've seen like in America there's like windows of time, like every 3 hours they'll open up the pre-orders again, just for it to immediately get taken down by either like bots or people that just get lucky enough to get their copy of an Xbox Series X or S. Like, yeah, every 3 hours, every like at 3 p.m., at 6 p.m., at 9 p.m., almost every day or every other day. And I think that the containing the supply is actually meeting demand, because they can effectively get the money like as soon as, and then they'll just be on a waiting list to ship out these consoles. And it's been working so far for them. And it worked for the Switch, Switch and the Wii. I'm not counting the Wii U because that didn't
Nobody
really help.
Nobody bought that.
Well, I think with those, though, that was more down to an underestimation of how many would sell.
Sure.
And I feel like potentially it's going to be the same with the Xbox, because it's the estimates of consoles sold is around 155,000 for the Series X and S combined on launch day. The Xbox One on launch day sold about 150,000. And if I was making a large expensive product now, I would probably expect it to sell a little bit less than the last large expensive product that I made, considering we're in the middle of a recession and a global pandemic. So I feel it might be a bit unfair on Microsoft to suggest it's intentional. I wouldn't have anticipated the day one sales beating the Xbox One, not at, you know, where we are in the world at the moment. So I genuinely do think it may actually well just be that they didn't think they were going to sell quite this many.
I think a big oversight that Microsoft and Sony both had as well is that although there are many people out there who have lost their jobs because of what's happened this year, there are also just as many people who have kept their jobs and no longer are spending on going out, going on holidays, and actually have the income. Maybe they wouldn't have bought an Xbox or a PlayStation as early as they have at the minute in under normal circumstances, but because they've got that additional income, there's that weird area, grey area of people who wouldn't have normally bought it, but are buying it now just because they've got nothing else to do or spend their money on.
Hmm.
That's actually a really good point that I hadn't thought of. And now that you say it, I'm suddenly realizing I'm in that group. That I, because my fiance is awesome, she's bought me a PlayStation 5 for Christmas. That's come out of bonus money that she got, because we are fortunately very lucky to still be able to do our jobs from home. But that potentially would have gone on something like a holiday or a trip if it hadn't been for the way the world is at the moment. Because I have not bought a console at launch since the DS Lite. So we probably would have ended up buying it next Christmas in the sales, but we didn't. Yeah, we bought it for launch, ready for Christmas this year. So yeah, that is a good point, actually.
Well, on the topic of buying consoles, brings us to our main topic. Has there been a console that you bought? I was trying to finesse the question as written, but now I'll read the question as written. What, if any, was a game you bought bought a console to play?
Of course, the answer is 1-2 Switch. It's one of them.
So you're one of the people who bought that.
I do actually own 1-2 Switch. It's not why I bought the Switch. I bought the Switch for Breath of the Wild, but I did get 1-2 Switch. I played it for about 30 minutes on the day I got the Switch in 2017, and it's been uninstalled ever since.
It's a cool little tech demo for what things like HD Rumble can do and stuff, isn't it? But it's not.
I didn't even think it's that.
It's not got longevity. But things like that game where you have to count how many marbles are rolling about, things like that. I thought that was quite nicely done. But I don't think it really counts as a full 40 quid game.
God, yeah, it was full price as well. Oh, God, I'm a fucking idiot. Take my money away from me, please.
It's fine. We did the same. I think we got it on sale, to be fair, though.
Yeah, I don't think that counts, because that was just a launch title you happened to buy. It wasn't a case of, oh, 1-2 Switch is coming out, I'm going to buy a Switch and buy that.
It definitely benefited from like the whole, like, you can feel the HD rumble though. Like that made me want to buy it. So I guess I didn't buy the console for 1-2 Switch, but I bought 1-2 Switch to get a feel of those like cool little features that were going to be in the Switch itself, which probably doesn't really justify the money I spent on that game. But the console itself and what it did, like, convinced me to buy that game on top of what I wanted it for.
I think, yeah, I know what you mean for that, because sort of when they showed it off at the launch event, it did kind of make you think, oh, there's new and interesting things. And I'm a little bit disappointed that HD Rumble hasn't really been utilized much, because I can see that there could be so many cool things that it could do. But I think where companies have tried to make their games usable both in docked and handheld mode. It's not really been used that much because you don't have the same degree of sort of granularity with HD Rumble when it's in handheld mode.
Anyone else?
So, can I with mine? So you know how I've pretty much now got this reputation that I don't play enough modern games. I just play loads of old obscure games on old systems. Well, I'm not going to break that stereotype now, and I'm going to say that I wanted an Xbox One specifically because I wanted to play Rare Replay, and it wasn't released on anything else. So I got this shiny brand new console, and I sat on it playing Jetpack and Saber Wolf and things like that, and Banjo Kazooie. I finally completed Banjo Kazooie after getting the Xbox One like 25 years late, but it was totally worth it. But it sort of does defeat the object of having this massive, expensive, high-powered console.
It is really funny that you say that, because I bought an Xbox One to play the Master Chief Collection, which is why I got the Xbox One. I played the first Halo, put the game down, and the only other game I ever played on it was Rare Replay.
It's the game to get the Xbox for. I think with the Xbox as well, and it's sort of the main reason that I've gone for this generation with the PS5 rather than an Xbox, is there's very little reason to get a game on Xbox now if you have a gaming PC. Because almost everything is now released on both. So it just sort of didn't see, because the only real difference is, I can play on the TV, but with the aid of a ridiculously long HDMI cable, I can already do that. So I kind of didn't need to. Rare Replay is one of those exceptions, which has never been released on any other platform, or even hinted that it's going to be released on any other platform.
Unfortunately, I don't have a HDMI cable that will reach from the living room into the bedroom. So I had to go for a Xbox.
You need a masonry drill, my friends.
I picked up Wipeout Omega Collection just on eBay, only because of the PS1 cover, like sleeve it had. Not to play it, but just to have it, just to own it, because I didn't intend on getting a PS4, but I'm like a big fan of the Wipeout series. And then, I don't know, just at some point I got a PS4 and I was like, oh yeah. So I don't know if that technically counts, but I did get the game before the console.
You got you bought the console specifically to play that game.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I'm back at playing PlayStation. But like, I've got loads of those kind of stories too. Like the same for Halo 3. Like pretty much, I think it's more of FOMO with everything else. Like with Halo 3 and Xbox 360, it's seeing everyone else play it, and Pokemon as well. Like from Sun and Moon to Sapphire, even all the way back to Nintendo 64, I got a Mario Kart because I got to play it when I was a kid over someone's house. Had such a great time with it, and like, I remember having to wait what felt like a year until like Christmas, maybe even more than a year, just to get my hands on my own copy of Mario Kart 64, and that was fantastic. Although I think probably the most embarrassing one, actually it's not embarrassing, forget it, I like it, was a lot of what the Wii U. Nothing really sold me with the Wii U until I saw Nintendo Land. And
I've never got around to playing that yet, actually.
Oh, it is. The multiplayer games on Nintendo Land are fantastic. Some of the best. It's exceptional. Just like having five players all in the same room. It's asymmetric. Like all three of them. And it's just so much fun, especially with the feature where you can see, it's got a camera inside the gamepad, and we turn it on so we can see what the person behind the gamepad is like, what their facial expressions were on the TV.
Really?
It's so funny.
I have never actually seen a game using that camera like that. I've had this for ages. Like when they discontinued the Wii U, there was a period where you could get Wii U games really cheap in CEX because they were trying to shift them all. So I just ended up buying a whole bunch of them cheap just because they were there. So I might need to crack that out next time I'm allowed to have friends around the house.
Yeah, I 100% would recommend Nintendo Land. Those three mini games, there's an Animal Crossing one, there's a Luigi's Mansion themed one, which is like a ghost is around the house. You're going to try and all four of you have to team up to get them. And it's a hide and seek mode. I think it's just generic Nintendo, like Toad and Mario. Like all these different Toads have to catch Mario. All three of them are just perfect, like party game little experiences.
Well, speaking of party games, and yes, I'm segueing into my console. On the Game Boy Advance, there was this little thing called WarioWare.
Oh, yes.
So when they announced the DS, and it turned out WarioWare Touched was going to be one of the launch titles, that convinced me to pick it up at launch, because who didn't want to play WarioWare with a stylus?
That is a great choice, actually. WarioWare Touched is so much fun.
Not technically a console, but handheld. I'm counting it. Because I'm a
judge. I obviously don't do it anymore because of the Switch, but I've bought many, many Nintendo handhelds just for Pokemon.
Yeah.
Like the Pokemon franchise has probably cost me so much money just in console purchases more than anything else.
Nintendo might be sort of the best example as well of a company that have had people buy their consoles specifically for a single game. Because if you think how many people bought the Wii just for Wii Sports. And they sold loads of them in places like youth centres and in care homes and so on as a way of getting sort of gentle exercise. And obviously Tetris sold the Game Boy. There's so many people who bought a Game Boy and never played anything other than Tetris, people who would not have played any other game.
I was just thinking even, like, how I feel like a lot of people who bought the Xbox Series S and X were probably waiting for that, like to get Halo Infinite, only for it to be delayed.
Yeah, are there actually any exclusive games on the Xbox One Series at the moment? The Xbox Series at the moment?
No, I don't believe that it's going to have any exclusives for the first 2 years, I think.
I think the only exclusive game across the two consoles is Demon's Souls. And I guess Astro's Playroom, if you count that.
And Spider-Man.
No, Spider-Man's on the PS4 as well.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, yeah, of course it is.
So Demon's Souls is, as far as I'm aware, it's only on the PlayStation 5. I think that's the only paid-for release that you can only get on the PlayStation 5, and the rest are all PS4 or PS5.
I think there's a few that are going to be exclusives, but aren't
Destruction All Stars.
Well, Destruction All Stars isn't until next year now either, is it?
No. Delayed.
I was just having a think, and I bought my PlayStation 3 to play DMC Devil May Cry. Yes, I like that game. Fight me. I actually bought Destiny because it came out. And I pre-ordered it on PS4 by mistake. I meant to pre-order it on PS3. And then it gets delivered. I open it and it's like, oh, I pre-ordered the wrong one.
Oh, no.
Which then just meant a few weeks later I bought a PS4.
You didn't feel like returning it and buying the one that you did want then?
No, to be honest with you, I kind of just sat there for a minute and went, I was going to get a PS4 anyway, let's be honest. So...
I feel like someone subconscious bought this game for them.
Probably. Breath of the Wild for the Switch, and I brought, although I bought it much later after the game came out, I bought my 3DS to play Fire Emblem Awakening, Fire Emblem, as I used to call it. But I think I've said before, like, there's nothing at the minute, like, there's no launch title that's made me go, oh god, I need to get the PS5 or I need to get the Xbox. I'm leaning to be honest with you, as it stands, I'm leaning towards the Xbox Series S or X, but I have a PC, so there's kind of no point. I also have an Xbox One, so I'm good for a few years, unless there's suddenly a massive exclusive that I just go, well, time to drop 600 quid, I suppose.
Bugsnax.
But yeah, Bugsnax is worth getting a PS5 for, but if you've got a gaming PC, then you can get it on the Epic Store. So I think it is purchasable. Oh, actually, no, you can play it on the PS4, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the problem for me as well is, like, I don't care. Like, this generation, I haven't cared for 4K because it wasn't really a thing. But, like, that's kind of the big thing of this new generation. And especially in, like, a year or two, I think we'll start to see a lot more of it being utilized. So part of me is also kind of like, well, is it finally time to actually maybe buy a good TV or something? I don't know.
I would say yes, but not necessarily for 4K. So for me, the jump from full HD to 4K was really not that much. And unless you're sitting particularly close or you've got a particularly large screen, it's only an incremental upgrade. It's not the upgrade that SD to HD was. But what is a huge upgrade and worth looking at is HDR. Especially for games with a lot of color. So like that, I've mentioned already, I'm really looking forward to the new Ratchet and Clank. And that's probably the primary reason for me wanting the PS5. And that does look like it's going to make really, really good use of really vivid color and lots of variation in color. And for me, with the TV in general, not necessarily for gaming, but with sort of watching like nature documentaries and stuff, HDR makes a massive difference. It just looks so much more vibrant and so much more lifelike. Whereas 4K was just, oh yeah, that's a little bit crisper.
Do you think Ratchet and Clank will be the next Knack?
I think Bugsnax is the next Knack. I mean that in a loving way.
Oh yeah, yeah. Totally. Because Bugsnax is the game that everyone looked at and thought, oh, that's a bit off the wall for a launch title. It's not generic brown shooter number 86 or boring car simulator number 77 and a third.
Whoa, I'm fucking so excited for Gran Turismo. Don't be like that.
Oh yeah.
And with that, I think we've reached the end of our podcast. Thank you for joining me, Rhodes, Dominoid, Nikki, and Winx. And thank you, gentle listener, for joining us here. Don't forget to check out GameGrid.com or keep an eye on wherever social media is posted. Just search for GameGrid for all of the latest news, reviews, and more. Thank you for listening and for subscribing across Amazon Music, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else. Don't forget that leaving a review, comment, or follow really helps the show out. And while you're at it, game on.